Okay, evening everybody, evening to those who just joined us. Good to see everybody. Well, it's 6:30, so we'll make a start with the meeting of the audit committee on the Wednesday 27th September 2023. Usual item first up, any apologies for absence?
Thank you, Chairman. We've received apologies from Councillor Peters. He has nominated Councillor Allen to attend the meeting as his substitute on this occasion.
Thanks, Andrew. Welcome, Councillor Allen. And hi, Councillor Chowdhury at the back as well. Declaration of interest from anybody, item number 2. I think that was a no, okay, thank you. Item 3, any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12? We don't have any urgent business for consideration at this meeting. Item 4, questions from the public. We haven't received any questions from the public for this meeting. Questions from members of the committee. Item 5, we haven't received any questions from members of the committee. Item 6, minutes of the previous meeting. Hope everybody's seen a copy of these. Would you like to go through them page by page? You'll be okay to take them? We'll take them then. So I propose the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Can I have a seconder, please? Councillor Sankey, thank you. We'll go to a vote. All those in favour? Anybody against? Any abstentions? Thank you. So we're carried, we'll approve those minutes. Item number 7, statement of the accounts. Over to our interim chief accountant to provide an update. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Right, well, we've got two statements of accounts. So in terms of 21-22, first of all, the outstanding valuation issues have been agreed with the external auditors. The revised pension figures have been received. So that's IAS 19 figures. And the accounts have been adjusted and went to the external auditors for review very recently. Now, I understand that the external auditors are awaiting on assurance from Ernst Young, who are the pension fund auditors, with regard to the pension fund. For 22-23 accounts, the external audit has commenced, and I understand it's currently on target to be delivered by the end of November. And as soon as the closing balances for 21-22 have been agreed by the external auditors, then the draft 22-23 accounts can be published. And thank you, Chair. Happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. So the pensions adjustment, that's the final hurdle for 21-22, as far as we're aware.
Yeah, I think it's the thing that really are waiting for. Yeah. Obviously... Yeah. External audit still have to review the information, the yeah. external accounts that have been provided.
Okay. So. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, I think the main issue is the assurance that the auditors need to receive from Ernst Young, the pension fund auditors, which is obviously outside of the council's control and also the external auditors' control. We have pressed for that to come forward as early as possible. But to a large extent, we are in the hands of the pension fund auditors, Ernst Young.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Over to questions from the group. Councillor Sankey.
Thank you very much, Chair. Clearly, the accounts are running quite late this time, and we know the reasons why in terms of the valuation work and that. It's now, hopefully, on the last hurdles. With that. So, just for clarity, we're not looking for anything from the ESBC staff. That you're purely waiting for confirmation from the pension fund. The external auditors are waiting for confirmation from the auditors and the pension fund that things are okay. Is that correct?
Not quite correct, I'm afraid. So, Anya, as she's said, has shared some information with us today on the adjustments relating to the valuation of the land and buildings, which we need to work through and check those through. And then there is an internal sort of quality control process that we go through within our team, where Andy Smith, who is the engagement lead, will review all of the audit file and make sure that he's happy with those numbers. So that needs to happen, and then we need to get the assurances from the pension fund auditor as well.
Right. So the valuation, there's a lot of work. I know Lisa and Anya have done a lot of work and got the new valuation people in, and we've done, there's a lot of positive work on that. So this is just... So whether realistically, when are we going to get from yourselves something that we can, the chair can sign, presumably sign off, that says the accounts, because they are quite late this time. And I'm just trying to get a picture of when we're going to get those accounts signed up, so then the focus then goes on to the current set of accounts.
I think you'll be able to give us an idea of how long that process might take. I'm aware you won't be able to give us a date at this stage, I expect, but if you can give us an idea of how long that final bit of the process you might be able to expect it to take.
Okay, so I think I would anticipate that we can perform the review of the movements and adjustments within the next couple of weeks. Then Ernst & Young have committed to providing their assurances by the end of October. We're assuming that they will not be much earlier than that. So, for example, if we receive the assurances at the end of October, there's nothing that they flag in their report, we should be in a position to proceed with the audit opinion sort of beginning to mid of November. If their report says something that causes us to need to do more work, then we'll have to follow that up. But those issues would probably be with the pension fund, not with the council, but it could just cause a further delay.
So we'll be signing the chair will be signing the accounts off mid-November-ish, is that what we're saying?
Yeah. I was going to say, so if we take the positive view that it'll all be okay, we're on track for signing the accounts.
Chair.
I'm a positive person like you. Yeah.
Yes, mid-November.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor
Wilson. Yeah, I don't think in all the time I've been on the audit committee that we've ever been in a position like this before. It's very strange. So we're going to be signing last year, the year before's accounts off, hopefully in November. And it seems to be like a knock-on effect that if we don't get that done, then we can't publish 22-23. And so we go on and on and on. So how confident are we that we're going to get this done? Because it's given me warning signs. I want to be positive, but you know, I've never been in a position like this. I've always been able to sign them off pretty quick, haven't we, Lisa, over the years? And ESBC has always been one of the best performing councils in the country for getting our accounts signed off, and it's just worrying me now that things are escalating on and the knock-on effect goes on and on and on, so we've got to bring this to a halt. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I mean, at the last meeting, we were far from an outlier in terms of not getting our accounts signed off. Was it 75% of councils in June? I don't know if that figure has moved or if you know if it's moved.
At the last update, the public sector audit appointments indicated that it was around 70%+ who still hadn't had signed off auditors' accounts for 21-22, and there are a lot of authorities up and down the country that have got a significant number of accounts open and not closed in terms of being audited. But yes, Councillor Hudson, you're quite right that we have had very strong performance in this area for a number of years. We were one of the first authorities to adopt early close down, but the regulatory environment has changed quite significantly, and I think we need to bear that in mind. The amount of rigour that the auditors need to undertake now, particularly around asset valuations and pensions, has changed dramatically. And obviously for the 21-22 year, we did run into these issues with asset valuations. And as a result of that, we've had to commission a different valuer. So that process has taken quite some time, in addition to which, obviously, there's been new challenge to the new valuer. But we have worked through those issues with the external auditor now. I do feel that we are in a good position, but as I've mentioned, we are in the hands of Ernst & Young, which is outside of our control for that pension fund assurance.
Can I just come back on that, Chair? So now we know that there's been a change of gameplay, as it were. Are we now planning ahead now to make sure that now we know that things have changed, that we take into account that that has happened, and so in the future we're not in the position that we are this year? Because we already know now the goalposts have changed, so the auditors need to change how they work. And you know, I want to be made sure that that is going to happen in the future.
Chair,
Can I just comment on that very quickly, Steve? Sorry, Councillor Sankey. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the changes made created a bit of a bottleneck in the audit industry, for want of a better word. So I think the movement of the goalposts created a delay in processing the claims. So hopefully if the sector's been able to adjust to those changes, then that will help us make the process easier next year. Yeah. So Councillor Sankey, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair. Just following on from the last point, so if we're working for mid-November for 21-22, what are we working, what date are we just want to get additional data signing for 22-23.
Obviously the external auditors have got a stint later on in the agenda, so we don't want to steal their thunder too much. From our perspective, we've got an audit committee scheduled for the end of November, which is where we plan to sign off the accounts for 22-23, and from discussions with the auditors, that is still on track, although it could well be quite tight.
Okay, thank you very much.
And obviously the committee will be kept informed throughout the year as to whether we're still on track. But okay, thank you. Any further questions? No, okay. Brilliant. Thank you very much for the report and for all your work on that. Is there anything else the committee can do to help expedite the rest of the process? I'm guessing that there isn't, but is there anything that we could be doing to make sure we do meet the November deadline? If we're not, that makes me happy.
I think it's just a case that we'll keep the committee informed.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to item 8, the revised internal audit plan for 23-24. Tracy, is this your first meeting? Nice to meet you. So Tracy and Ruby are going to take us to the double team to take us through item number 8. Hand over to you guys.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So the document you have in front of you is the revised plan. The original audit plan for this year came to the committee in March, so this is the updated one. With the corporate plan being undertaken and updated in July, we thought it was a good opportunity to review and reflect on our plan, so that's why we've then revised it. During the period, in July and August, we've engaged with the corporate management team members to ensure that all of their areas under their remit within the plan are still appropriate and for this year. And it went to their meeting last week on the 20th, and it's been signed off collectively by themselves before coming to yourself today. So in terms of the actual detail of the tables in the plan, the bold areas are indicating the areas that we consider as core areas in producing our annual head of internal audit opinion. And then also we've got the risk assessed areas and also the grant certification work. At the point of updating the plan, we have 7 areas that are grant certifications that are planned for this year, and some of that work has been undertaken and is included within the progress report and that update. So I'll pause there to see if there's any comments or questions from anyone.
Thank you, Tracy. Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I was interested in, I've looked at the plan and it seems comprehensive. I'm just trying to work out a couple of questions. What's changed? What things have been removed and what things have been added? Sorry, because we've obviously signed off the March one, and I'm just trying to make sure that we understand what we've signed off as changes from the original stats. So could you identify which are new ones and which are old ones, please?
Within the original plan from March, the areas that have been taken out, that's either because we've incorporated them into other areas that are in the plan. So, for example, risk management was a standalone area in the original plan, but we now have an area that's called Head of Internal Audit Opinion Work, and that's been moved into that heading. So there are some in some elements of it. If I just run through quickly for you, one area was IT audit, We've actually removed that now because we had a cyber security review undertaken during last year's, as part of last year's audit plan, and that was significant assurance. So we felt that it wasn't needed in the plan again for this year. It would be as part of the cyclical plan going forward. So that one has been taken out. Yeah. The next one is creditor payments. That one we've taken out of the plan. Again, it was significant assurance previously. It will be subject to audit, but it's in line with our cyclical planning processes. So obviously if there is anything significant as an issue or a weakness that's identified, then it would go back into the plan. We're at the moment, because nothing big issues were coming out of the review and it was significant assurance, we felt it was okay to remove that from this year's plan. The next one is tourism and cultural development, was in the original plan. In terms of the timing of that fieldwork, we've now moved it for the next plan, next year. We're taking it out of this year's plan and putting it into next year's plan. That felt that was the more appropriate timing to do the work. And then the next one that had been removed is around the disposals. And again, previous reviews that we've undertaken in that area, the last review was a full assurance on that work. That. So again, we've moved it out of this year's plan, but we've put it in the planning process for cyclical review. And then the last one is Washlands Enhancement Project. And again, that was a timing issue, really. It was originally put in the plan, but I think because things haven't progressed quite as far as we anticipated, we've moved that out of this year's plan, and the intention is that then going into next year's. So in terms of adding in, we've made adjustments to... So the head of internal audit that I touched on, that one is an additional one, but it's incorporating the risk management elements, but it's a wider review this time, so it's slightly more than the original one there. In terms of the... the grant certification work, at the time of the original plan, there were more limited days available for that work. Obviously, now as we've progressed into the year, there are other grant certifications that have been identified that we need to undertake, so that's been increased, the days within that area. And the Stronger Towns Fund, the days around that area have been increased because we're undertaking two pieces of work. We've undertaken the one in relation to the governance arrangements, which again is completed and covered within the progress report, and then we've got another review for later in the year. In terms of the work that we'd undertaken last year,
if you look at Appendix C, which I think Councillor Sankey might be referring to, this is actions that were due by the 31st of August this year and yet to be implemented. And if you see there,
Sorry, Councillor Hudson, that's the progress report. That's in the progress report.
Yeah, so you've taken cyber security out, but we've got things here that say that we were going to do it. So have I misunderstood that?
That's in relation to the actions that have come out of that review. We wouldn't necessarily revisit an area of audit if there's outstanding actions on the system.
So the action in... Sorry. So the action came from last year's cyber security review, but the action is still to be implemented. That's why it's in the action report.
Yeah. So that will then, it's still being tracked as part of our audit planning, but it's under the action tracking and monitoring side of it. Yeah. What we didn't feel that was that we needed a full audit within the area of IT based on the other areas that we've looked at and reflected on for this financial year.
Councillor Sankey?
If I may, Chair, certainly there's been a number of councillors have written in regarding cyber security and questioned some of the issues relating to that. And certainly myself, IT have come back to me and said, sorry, we've had false positives on you. So there are questions around what's happening on the cyber security area now. So my particular one, I got accused of opening inappropriate, not inappropriate, their test emails that you shouldn't do from external organisations at 1:40 in the morning, and it was false positive. So clearly there was a problem with the systems. So, and I know this is one more council that had similar issues. So there's clearly some issues that are not quite right with that, which is why I'm sort of raising it.
Thank you, Councillor. So if we do, either officers or members have issues, how do we bubble that up to you guys to decide if it should go back into a review? Is there a way in which we can do that?
Obviously we can adapt, and it's a flexible plan, so this is coming here for discussion and final sign-off, really. That is something we can reflect on and go back, and obviously we'd need to speak to the officers and the corporate management team collectively as well.
To reflect on that
and see whether it's something that can be put back into.
I was just wondering where the channel is for that discussion to take place, and not predetermine the outcome of the discussion. I'm just wondering what the channel is, yeah. Lisa, I think you're first.
Yeah, I think essentially what the auditors have done is already conduct a review of this area around the controls in place and the management arrangements, and already made some recommendations for management to implement. And obviously that they are in the progress of being implemented, but in the next report it does highlight that there's some still to be actioned.
Yes, there is the actions to come there, but clearly they've identified issues, so again, follow-up needs to be undertaken to make sure that, yes, they've done their management, yes, they've identified the issues, but then we need to make sure that the corrective action has been taken, because if you look at the top five risks, six risks actually, six risks are the top six risks in our report. C9 does refer to unauthorised access of IT, so with the cyber security. So I think that it does warrant being in there. So I question why we've got that as one of our top six risks in the whole authority, yet we're sort of downplaying it. It doesn't quite logically add up.
But I imagine the purpose of the implementation is that will address moving forwards.
But if it hasn't, if it's already identified issues, then it needs to be followed up to make sure those issues are properly closed to the satisfaction of the auditors.
Which would be the implementation part?
We are doing that, but that's through the routine action tracking and monitoring that we do. So all the recommendations that are made on all the individual reports track through the system. We get self-assessment assurance from the relevant owners, managers of those actions. We ask for evidence of the implementation and we validate that. So that's been done through the monitoring rather than a standalone audit. It may be that because the actions are still ongoing at the moment, wait for that to be implemented and then we have the follow-up.
Yeah, the next audit report will be very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lisa, I think we're starting to bleed into the next item, so I'll close after this comment from Lisa.
I was just going to add, Chair, that that's the key difference as we've moved from CW audit to 360 assurance. Previously, the recommendation tracking relied on management self-assurance, and under 360 assurance, the internal auditors are conducting more of a review and requiring evidence to demonstrate that actions have been implemented rather than just taking the managers or the officers' word effectively that they've implemented them. So that should perhaps provide you with more assurance going forward.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, thank you, Tracy and Ruby. We're staying with you for the next item, which is the actual progress report. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Chair. If we go to page 2 of our report, the snapshot there with the key messages. So the report is giving you an update of all the work that's been undertaken in the period, so from April to the end of August, early September. And during the period, we've issued 2 final reports. 4 grant certifications have been undertaken and provided, and we've had a number of planning meetings that we've held in terms of the reviews within the plan. And you will see in the body of the report under Appendix C summaries of all the terms of reference that have been issued and discussed and agreed with officers. In terms of the action tracking, as we've just touched on, we are now validating all of the implementation of actions, and we're monitoring through the Pentana tracking system. And at the point of writing the report, in terms of all recommendations that were due for between the period April to the end of August, we had 46% that had been implemented. And of those that are overdue on the system, there were 7. So they're detailed within the Appendix C of the progress report. We do have 2 historical actions that were due before the start of April that were still sitting on the system as open. And again, they're detailed for information in summary in the appendices. So I'm happy to pause there and see if there are any questions on the detail.
At this point, I was going to hand over to John, if that's okay, because yeah. A few of those implementations come back to commercial property, so John's kindly agreed to come along tonight and speak to those to help colleagues to answer questions.
Is there in the commercial property aspect of the report, and I suppose addressing the positives in particular, we've got signed lease agreements in place for all leasehold properties, and of course the income received from all these properties are a significant contributor to the council's income. Council properties are maintained and utilised in accordance with their respective lease terms and conditions, and if there are any issues, we either remedy them or we ask the tenant to. One of the bigger issues, I would say, is the terrier councillors. This is something which I identified as a risk when I first started with the council in March 2022. The terrier software being used was no longer supported by the developer, but wasn't in any immediate danger of imploding. Consequently, and in response to that, we did some benchmarking in the summer against other local authorities to identify what software was being used elsewhere, and this returned quite a wide array of software, both being used internally and externally by other developers. And inquiries were subsequently made with a company called iDocs. They're a very well-known company when it comes to property management and other local authority areas. They did a presentation in the autumn of last year, and we liked what we saw. But of course, when you're going for external options, this comes at a cost. And so in December 2022, a capital bid was submitted, and that was approved. And of course, we were thinking along the lines of procurement and frameworks at that point. However, following further inquiries of our IT department, it was discovered that there was a possible solution which could be developed internally. So that's where we are now. Councils are well underway with this. We've entered the testing phase, and our property legal executive, Liz Eastoff, is dedicating time to testing out the software on a weekly basis. The property data has been backed up, it's been transferred to the new software, so we've got duplicate copies in different locations, and we are meeting with IT regularly to give feedback on the software and how things can be developed further. So I think overall it's quite a positive story. We're on the eve of procurement to go out there for an external developer until, you know, we spoke to IT and they had capacity to produce the software for us, the Access database, and it's been done now, it's been completed, but it's not the finished article. We are building on this software. I suppose the key thing that we should be taking away from it is that it's not cost us anything to do. You know, we were about to engage a iDocs and go down that path, and we didn't in the end. I don't think I can add any more, actually, Chair. I think, like I say, we're well underway with testing the new software. The data has been transferred, and we're working closely with IT to get it up to scratch. Thank you.
Great, thank you for that, John. I've got a couple of questions before I open up. So my first is on the implementation rates. Obviously, we're at 46% at the moment, which under the traffic light system that we're suggesting using in future years would give us limited assurance. And I think it says in the appendix that we need to allow some time for arrangements to be embedded. I guess, what are the key actions and milestones for embedding those arrangements? What do you think we need to do over the next year, be it staff training or changing the way in which officers are alerted to implementations? Would be my first question. What do we need to do to embed those arrangements? And my second comment, it's more a comment for the committee, is around car parks. I lost my page. We're having some issues with cash reconciliation sheets and audit tickets from the new car park contractor, and we're talking about going to dispute resolution. Yes, so I know we've got value for money scrutiny, a review of car park charges. So I guess for the committee's benefit, that'd be something I'd be particularly keen to keep close to, because I'd be keen for that committee to have clean data, as it were, when they're carrying out that review. So if that's something that we could keep on the agenda for future meetings or keep the committee informed about, that would be good. But yeah, the first question, in terms of embedding the arrangements, what do you think are the key actions and the key milestones that we need to see over the next year?
First and foremost, I think what we're doing is, as we're undertaking the reviews and agreeing the reports, we're making sure that the individuals that we're dealing with at that point fully understand the process and the implications and how that then feeds into our section of the... It's only that element of the head of internal audit opinion around the action tracking. So it wouldn't necessarily mean the overall opinion statement would be limited or moderate. It's the element in relation to the monitoring and action tracking. So I just wanted to just clarify that part. But yeah, in terms of... So going forward, I think there's that process really of making sure that officers within the council are fully aware of the change in that process, and therefore as we're discussing and agreeing recommendations and actions, they need to make sure we collectively need to make sure that they are achievable recommendations and the date.
I was just going to say, when I hold the exit meetings with the officers and we're agreeing the recommendations and the implementation dates, I do remind everyone at the time to say that the action tracking system will monitor against the original implementation date. So be a little bit more conservative with your implementation dates. Otherwise, everyone's busy and everyone's got a large portfolio. So rather than just put 2 months or 3 months, we're just asking that acid test question, are you realistically going to be able to achieve that? Or are we better extending, allowing for, there are key deadlines and returns that are always going on at the council. So just being mindful of what's coming up down the line. Can you realistically achieve that? And we are holding those conversations with every officer that we speak to as part of the audit.
Okay,
I was just going to come in there, Chair. From a contract management perspective, I have had discussions with the internal auditors to look at improving the reminder system that goes out to managers and also chief officers and myself as the contract manager, so that there is sort of regular reminders going out and everyone's aware of that.
Thanks, Lisa. Sorry, I've dominated that first topic. Over to you, Councillor.
Okay. I know it's a low risk, or it's down as a low risk, but are we ever going to sign off this leisure contract? That's one thing. We've actually got an information date of that, a revised one, and we're out of time on that one. That was the 30th of June. And then I noticed that on some of the other things that still need to be done, we haven't got any, it says no date provided. So are we able to perhaps sometime give us some dates of when are we going to implement some of these very important things? Much like the car parking, it's got no revised implementation date provided. That goes back to April. So I know legally the leisure contract is not a problem because of the way the law is, but
I think it's a tie up all the details. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that something we can keep working through?
Really? Yeah. So I would say on the season ticket income, an update has been received, just a timing issue, an update has been received, and officers have indicated that the spreadsheet is now tracking season ticket income, and I have asked for evidence of that spreadsheet, and once I've received that, that can be marked as implemented. So that's just working its way through the process, and I'll be doing the same with the others.
So at our next meeting in December, we'll have an update on that one.
I hope so, yes.
Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I've got one or two minor points. The item that about the property one, the terrier system. In the last administration, it was the end of last administration, Value for Money Scrutiny Committee raised issues around whether we effectively buy or build our IT software. I think John, I think was at the various on that one, I believe. You and I were sat in the same meeting when it was mentioned on that. We've recently decided to build ourselves and do the work ourselves. Given the recent loss of Boston coming up this Friday one of our very key people who's doing the most superb job leaving, how does that affect the risks associated with this? Because this is a sensitive one that we don't want to let the ball slip, because certainly the value for money, and Councillor Locke was very keen on going for a package solution, complete everything as much as possible, a package solution, mainly around the Microsoft and things that you may recall that there was discussions on that. And it was an approach of buy rather than build because of the risk element, and I know that it costs more. The risks have materialised with one of the very key, very able members going this week, and I just wondered what the risks of our strategy and whether we ought to be reconsidering the build and buy argument on that one, if I may, Chair.
In terms of the buy or build argument, I suppose you've got to look at it as a positive that we've not had to spend anything and we've had capacity internally to create the software. The Dynamics and Access software, and Duke, I believe, is an extension of Microsoft product anyway. We use it across the council for different tasks. Dan Arnold is absolutely fantastic. We're going to miss him, but he's not involved in terms of the software. He's more in the democratic services procurement area, and also the website IT element. Yeah, absolutely. But in terms of this software, that's relying on colleagues such as Stuart. So we don't have no bearing. That's a short answer.
Losing one of our really excellent people.
I agree.
And adopting a build rather than buy. I was concerned about the issues of beginning to have another oops moment. But if that's not, that's great.
I mean, just to reassure you again, Councillor Sankey, I mean, we're entering the testing phase now. We've got the software, it's up and running, the data is transferred to the new software. It's more of a case of testing it out, making sure all the records are present there following the transfer, and then adding to it as we go along, because there are other elements such as integration with Outlook, using MapInfo, which is a secondary piece of software that we want to integrate into this new software. So it's going well, but we're a small team in legal, and it's down to one person to test it all out, and she's dedicating a few hours a week to it. So we'll get there. I'm quite confident that the target date is realistic and something that we can hit. So all is well.
I look forward to it. okay, moving on to the other points I've got, and I think the Chair mentioned about 46%. What I've done, I've looked back at the audit report, the audit update report issued this time last year. Right, so just compared last year's to this year's to see how we are performing on the work. And I'm not, again, because we've changed auditors, we can't easily compare like with like. But we talk here of so far 46%. Last year's figures talk around, and it's slightly misleading, last year's talk about 102 delivered by the end of August from April 19. So they've actually done 90% of the work, right? So last year's audit report said 90%. This year's audit report said
46%, right? Yes, they're apples and pears. I fully accept that. What I don't know is 46 good, bad, or indifferent? And I just wouldn't mind a sort of response on that one. I've got two or three other questions, if that's all right, Chair. Do you want to join first? It's not a question for you, John. No, absolutely not. I was worried if you answered me.
Sorry, we were trying to catch my eye there. Colleagues from internal audit, or Lisa, were you about to come in? I don't know if you can give us an idea of a benchmark.
I was just going to stress, really, that I don't think you're comparing apples with apples.
I agree.
Councillor Sankey, because it is a changing approach. And what I would highlight is on pages 14 and 15, which set out the actions that remain outstanding. It's only 9 actions, and I suspect if you were to compare that with other local authorities, the list would be significantly higher, and all of those items are in either the lower or medium categories. And what you can see there from the updates is that officers are proactively taking action to rectify those and action them.
Yes. Okay, I won't push it, but it was just, is 46% good or bad, given we've changed the goalpost? And I've said up front, apples and pears, I don't know the answers. So anyway, moving on to another question I've got, was around, which I think Councillor Hudson's mentioned, about car parking and the concerns around that. We are losing, it's costing us a lot of money in the car parking situation, which we all know, and we've all, you know, COVID has had a major impact on the way people live their lives, and therefore car parking is a big impact on that. Given that we've got all these difficulties here, is it realistic for a recommendation to come out in the next few weeks on the way forward if we haven't got the base data in this area? Because the corporate plan talks of October for car parking, completion of the car parking with you, Chair.
Yeah.
And I just wondered from an audit point perspective, because you put this in here, is it viable to complete the review in the next few weeks? I mean, I don't know if the Cabinet Member for Finance wishes to comment as he'd be on Cabinet, but it's just an interest, because I think that might be a bit optimistic, not through any fault of our own, but clearly it's down on the corporate plan.
As I say, the same issue caught my eye, but it sounds, Ruby, you mentioned that season ticket income, we seem to make some progress on that, if I understood that correctly.
So you've made progress on season ticket income, but obviously at the time that we completed our audit, the new cash collection contract has come in since our audit was completed. So we did highlight there were issues with reconciliations then.
I'm not complaining about that. You've highlighted it. I'm very... You know,
yep.
We all know there's a problem in this area. Everybody knows. It's not secret. We all know there's a issue in this area, and there's all sorts of issues with car parking in different levels. It was really around, given that we haven't got what I consider to be core data, is it the auditor's view that it's realistic to be able to have a review? Because I personally would, I wish them luck, but it opens us up to challenge if you actually come up with a recommendation if we haven't got the core data to do it.
This is your own car parking review.
Well, we are doing in the corporate plan, which is another aspect of this.
I've just asked Lisa to come in.
I think we might be talking at cross purposes to some extent. Obviously, the internal audit report is talking about the controls that are in place around car parking, and they've highlighted that there's an issue with reconciliation, which the manager and the chief officer are taking action to sort that issue out. I think what Councillor Sankey is referring to is there's a corporate plan target to review car parking income going forward, and that's something that officers are working on at present.
And officers don't think this lack of number of issues around car parking isn't just
this in itself shouldn't prevent it happening, no, because we're obviously we can look at, we don't just look at one window of data, we're looking at, we'll look at previous data to give ourselves assurance.
So they're a new contractor, so we've got a lot of data from the previous contractors, is that? Okay.
Nothing else, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think we probably covered some of what I was going to say already, but I'll just recap it anyway, in brief. So for 21-22 financial statements, Anya has shared the latest adjustments with me today, and subject to looking through those and our internal review process, I think we can consider those issues now closed. So we just need to wait for the EY assurances, and if everything goes to plan, we'll be ready to issue our opinion in early November. 2022-23 financial statements work is also in progress at the same time. There's no significant findings to report to you at the moment. We're aiming also to report our findings on those to the November Audit Committee. So a lot going on in November. But, you know, the delays in finalising the 21-22 statements has had a bit of an impact. We have got off to a slightly slower start than I would have liked, so sort of achieving that goal will really be dependent on Anya and Lisa and the team continuing to support us, supplying the information that we need throughout the next few weeks. The other piece of work that's ongoing at the moment is the 22-23 value for money audit. That's in progress. I think that will be coming to the December audit committee once the draft AAR has been circulated to officers for agreement. As far as I'm aware at the moment, there's no significant weaknesses that have been identified, so that looks like it's going to be another high standard report. And that was everything that I wanted to cover.
Excellent, thank you. All sounds positive. Famous last words. And over to the committee for any comments or questions. No? Brilliant. Thank you, Sarah. Item number 11, revenue and capital outturn report for Q1. So handing back over to Anya as our interim chief accountant to give us an update.
Activity as well as a summary of the key corporate and strategic risks facing the authority. So the Council set a baseline revenue budget of £15.64 million in February 2023 when the medium-term financial strategy for 23-24 to 25-26, including the capital programme, was approved. The report highlights that there is a current estimated net forecast underspend of £496k for the full financial year 23-24. The Council is benefiting from forecast windfall higher returns on its investment income of £787k, which has offset other ongoing financial pressures on the baseline budget. There's a number of key risks which have been forecast and have been itemised on pages 3 to 4 of the report. Section 4 provides more discussion about the revenue estimates, whilst greater detail can be found in Appendix A, including itemised detail of the forecast variances. In line with the improved MTFS, the forecast underspend is ring-fenced towards the capital resources which are largely fully allocated. You'll find Section 5 provides further details about the Council's treasury management activities and the level of our investments and borrowing at the end of June, with a full schedule of investments that have been attached to Appendix B. Overall, our treasury management activities are in line with the approved treasury management strategy. More information about the Council's extensive capital programme, which currently totals £34 million, can be found in Section 6 and on pages 10, 11 and 12 of the report. And this shows that, on the whole, projects are currently on target to deliver within budget. And finally, Section 8 and Appendix D covers risk management and the measures taken to manage these risks. So no changes have been identified to the current list levels for this quarter. That covers the key points within the report. And happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Anya. Over to colleagues. Tell you why I look at you first, Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I'm quite sad reading these reports, but I do appreciate them, so thank you, Anya. I've got two or three questions, not so much around the actual numbers, but the impact of services and value for money. Environmental services side is one example. We've the staff costs seem to have gone up hugely, and without really any explanation. Staff budget in 22-23 was just under 3 million. The budget for the current year was up by 580,000 because they kept on overspending. So it's been increased for the current year by nearly £600,000. And yet, we're still forecasting a spend of £323,000 overspent on that. So what we're actually saying is from 22-23, the staff costs have gone up by 903,000, which in audit terms I would consider that a material factor, and i.e. 30% in effectively 1 year, which to me seems high. And I just wondered if we could get that as part of the value for money one, or even an update on the next meeting. I'm not looking necessarily for answers, because I'm sure that there are a number of answers and it probably needs a more comprehensive, but it's certainly probably the single biggest item of increased expenditure, so I think that would be something we would probably want to look at. I'm not sure if the Cabinet Member for Finance knows the answers intimately.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Chair. What I would say, Councillor Sankey, is that there is explanation in the report.
Yes,
but I'd add to that the Environment Service is one of the largest areas in the council from a staffing perspective. So one of the key drivers for that increased expenditure that you're referring to is inflation and the pay awards.
Yes, 10%. Yes, I fully accept that there are elements of it. It's just 30% in 1 year, increasing the cost last year as part of the MTFS by nearly 600,000 in then, which is nearly to 20% increase, to try to address the overspends, and comes in with exactly the same pretty much overspend again, just warrants probably a more thorough consideration. And there are explanations.
Yes,
but it's not the level of detail which I wouldn't expect in this particular report.
Yep. Obviously, there's the housing growth factor as well, as we talked about through the groups. Obviously, we assumed just two additional vehicles would be needed, and obviously, from the round modelling exercise, that's increased to three. And also, as we've previously reported, the levels of sickness. But I think in terms of the more in-depth review that perhaps you're talking about, that's probably something more for Value for Money Scrutiny Committee rather than this committee as a governance item.
Could I suggest, Chair, then, I'll raise it with the Value for Money, and if they don't wish to take it forward, I think it's an audit, it is an issue of significance for the accounts that we're spending £1 million more than in a year in one particular area. I do think that is material, as the auditors have defined, is a material issue. So I do think it is an important issue to take forward.
Happy to consider that. You sit on the Value for Money Committee, don't you?
Yes, but the degree of reluctance to... Yeah, we've got certain items on the way anyway, so whether this then becomes another one, it's up to the Chair. The Chair will tell us what he wants to do.
Are you happy to take that on and then come back to us?
There is with the Chair. I can't guarantee the Chair will want to consider this.
Okay. Sorry, Councillor, did you want to come in first? My name's Councillor. Raise your hand, Councillor.
Councillor Sankey is trying to raise a point about these net pressures on the environment team, and it's remarkable because it's kind of like what Councillor Faulkner was doing this time last year, and I think the year before that as well. And I've just managed to find MTFS slides for the budget that we were setting at the beginning of this year. And I've recalled that Ray was very keen to get more funding and more resource into this. There was a very lengthy discussion at LDL about it. I think there was a lot of increases in the budget there for staffing and the provision of, it looks like, one more vehicle or new vehicles. And now we're finding out that there's another two vehicles that's needed. And I take the point that it's because of housing growth, but we knew when the houses were going to be built. There was quite a lengthy study into when the houses are going to be completed and when they would need waste collecting. So I don't think, if we can't answer it here, that's fine, but I'm just making the point that this has been going on for years, and it's not like as if nobody knows about it. It's not a new thing at all. And so if Value for Money can pick it up, that would be good. If Audit can have a look at it, that would be great. Perhaps the Cabinet might want to look at it as well, because it seems to be a complete anathema to me how we can get, how the authority can get the trajectory and budgeting so wrong every year is just beyond me.
Thank you. Councillor, did you want to come in?
I've just got one more question. But if Councillor wants to pick up.
Yeah, I'm just looking through some of the forecast net pressures, and they're quite alarming, really. I think some of the scrutiny committees need to start looking at some of these. And the Arts Brewhouse functions. I spent quite a few times going to the Brewhouse last year as mayor, and it's the jewel in the crown. It's a great place. It's always packed every time I've been. So it's been sold out. It says here that there's a demand issue with the cafe, and I understand we're going to have to do the electrical testing work on there, but you know, we need to look at. It's a lot of money, £5,000 net pressure. We're looking at net pressure there of £67,000. The uncertainty of what's going on there is obviously a big factor in, are the trades going to stay, are they going, or what? So I think we need to, I know it's probably not for this committee, but it's highlighted, you know, in our case that we've got to keep our eye on what's going on there, because it could be quite a significant cost to us through the year. So the Cabinet really need to, start and get some plans. I'm just fed up with people keep talking about things. It's about time we actually got on and did something, you know. Net pressure on planning and land charges, £95,000, another big thing. Additional staffing expenditure. I know that there's been a problem this year with staffing in planning, and I know that there's been a lot of temporary staff, because every time I've had an issue with planning, I've always talked to different people. So hopefully that will settle down. There's all things like that that I think that, you know, although it's not directly our responsibility, but I think as the audit committee and, you know, looking at the finances of the council, that we really need to keep our eye on these significant pressures on the finances of the council. Because the last thing I want to do is end up with a Birmingham council for ESBC. We don't deserve it. We've worked very hard over many, many years to keep the council in good financial position, and I want this to continue. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the forecast shows we're in that place.
I suppose there's a couple of, if I can come back on a few of the points that have been made first. Obviously, when we set the budget around waste management, it was clear that the growth that was included in the MTFS was always going to be subject to the round modelling exercise, and that piece of work has been done very recently and has come through for approval, and that does show that more vehicles are needed than envisaged when we set the budget. In terms of the brew house and markets, where there is ongoing pressures on those areas, that was something, again, that was recognised when we set the MTFS, and it was a conscious decision by the administration at the time not to revise those budgets, but instead to leave them as a target, and instead to ensure that the budget overall was robust. There is a contingency built in to the budgets overall that recognises the pressures on those areas. And I think, just as a final point, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that this is a very positive report. It does demonstrate an overall underspend, whereas many authorities up and down the country are reporting very substantial overspends at this early stage of the financial year due to the economic pressures that are on what the country's facing. So I think overall it is a very positive position, but at the same time it does recognise that there are underlying pressures.
Thank you. Councillor Charges, do you still want to speak?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think obviously the reference has been made to the cost pressures, and I think I just want to clarify something really. First thing is that Councillor Sankey refers to the previous budgets and the increase in the budget, but I think first and foremost we need to remember that this budget that we actually inherited is not our budget. It was your budget set by the previous administration. So there is something to be said. Did we get it right in the first place? There's an arguable thing that maybe we didn't have sufficient monies in the first place. But notwithstanding that, obviously we have incurred some cost pressures. Explanations in the report, and in relation to obviously, you know, some sickness levels, maybe more overtime rounds and housing growth that we talked about already. I think you're right in terms of moving forward. Are we looking at it? Of course we are looking at it. I think we are in the process of looking at the waste management, and I think we're looking to increase the vehicles that we've said. We're looking at the rounds. So hopefully when we set the budget again, we'll have the right number in the budget in the first place, so you know, so you got the right sort of benchmark to measure from. And same thing goes for, I think, just to add to what Lisa said really, when you talk about the pressures in other areas, don't forget that we are measuring against the previous administration's budget, and you were part of that. And you have to then really question the baseline. And overall comment, just to reiterate again what Lisa said really, that in terms of the financial controls and the overall financial position, just to reassure Councillor Hudson that, you know, there is overall, there's an underspent position, and we are, you know, overall we are still in a really good position, and we hope that, you know, that continues, and we're keeping a close eye on that. So hope that reassures you.
Thank you. Councillor Allen wants to move first, then Councillor Sankey.
Yeah, Councillor Chowdhury has made an extra effort there to not be too political, but then being quite political. And I think it's not really a political issue, that's my point. We did extensive exercise last year about the budget, about the waste collection rounds, and the number's still long, and the year before that. But it's good, because Councillor Chowdhury is across it, and by that, I assume there won't be any problems next year at all. Or for any of the cost pressures that are in this report now, be significantly less next year. That's the assurance that I've just got, so I would look forward to this time next year. I think that's all about, Chair.
Councillor Sankey.
Yes, thank you. I think I in Cabinet did that with, I have to say, with 99% of all the hard work was done by the officers, but I stand by that as the best estimate that we could get at that particular time, and I think it's right. But it does say that particular area has gone up year on year significantly, and it's still going up. You know, it's going up faster because we bumped it up, and then we've had another 300,000. 30% is a lot higher than it has done in recent. So yes, either we got it wrong, sorry, or something else is not happening, and we just need to keep on top of that. And I'm pleased that we've got the reassurance now that all these budgets will be well managed down. And yes, I think Lisa's quite right. we have got an underspend of around the £500,000 mark, which is great news, and the same, pretty much the same as last year. So, and again, a lot of that credit goes to the accountants that have done an excellent job in controlling it. And so long as the councillors don't decide that there's the money pot is there, and I'm quite confident that the cabinet member won't allow them to keep on dipping into the pot and spending lots of money, I am sure that it will come out similar underspends that you want to achieve. And I'm not in church anymore, so I can go back to the point I was going to ask about. The one point again, and I think this is not political at all, is around supported housing. And we have put quite a lot of money into that, and it looks a lot of money, £1.5 million in that, but that only covers the one-off element backwards. And if it does, if this risk materialises, there are lots of other costs coming in that, which I'm sure the accountants will be only too pleased to, or not too pleased, but to tell us what they are. So really my question there is there enough money in the pot, in the reserves for that? And I think we just need to make sure that we've got enough money in for the supported house, unless we know that something's greatly improved in the recent weeks. We're waiting for the case on that one. And my last one, you'll be pleased, is around the, which Councillor Hudson mentioned, the land charges. Again, just to re-emphasise, 65k loss, 121k extra staff. Yes, we've got that. This is net, so we have actually got the income, and I understand we're limited on that. But we've also got reserves depleted on the reference to that, and I just wondered what we're going to do about the reserves depleted, because this is an area I think all parties know that it's an area that we need to improve on, because we get more grumbles from here. I mean, this is the planning is the equivalent of the county council's potholes. And so that, sorry Phil, I have to apologise, but it's that sort of area that, so it's really what's going to happen around that area, because clearly the reserves, I'm sure Lisa's got an answer to that one, but it's highlighted the reserves are empty. So, and now you'll be pleased I'll shut up.
Thank you, Lisa.
When you say land charges, don't you mean in the planning?
Planning and land charges.
Yes. So, yes, the relevant chief officer is looking at that particular area, and obviously it will be considered as part of the development of the MTFS going forward.
Thank you.
Councillor Hudson.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it quite clear. I think, at least in all the time I've been on this committee, I've never been political once. I've always had it that we're all in this together, whatever, you know, political persuasion you are, that we are a team. And, you know, I know the way that the chair is conducting himself, he's pretty much the same. And, I just needed to let you know that we have looked at these figures, and yes, there is a surplus, and you do a great job, and I'm hoping that we'll have a bigger surplus at the end of the year when these overspends don't materialise. So, so that's where we are. And I'm just sorry that it's just me and Steve that seem to be asking most of the questions this evening.
Any more questions from colleagues? Councillor Cookie. Can I just jump in, Lisa, if that's okay? I spoke to Lisa this week. On the back of the carbon literacy training, which I'm guessing most people have been, everyone's been on, which I thought was brilliant, I'd be quite keen to look at this down the track about our investment portfolio and the issue that you're talking about. So I'd be quite keen, and we've obviously got a busy end of the year, I'd be quite keen for us to pick this up as an issue moving forwards, which is what I'd set up for. Hand over to Lisa. Is there anything you'd like to add, sorry? Yeah.
Just to reiterate, really, that in terms of our treasury management strategy, the requirements of government and the code of practice are that we are required to primarily look at security of the council's cash, it's obviously taxpayers' money, liquidity in terms of making sure that money is available when the council needs to make payments and carry out its activities, and then the rate of return is sort of the third issue that we would take into consideration. Sustainability is a factor, but it's not a key driver for us, and making sure that we've got strong counterparties. Clearly, if there was a counterparty that we were aware of that there were significant sustainability issues, then we would look to steer away from that.
Thank you, Lisa.
No mention of ethical investment.
Well, equally, we would factor that in as well, where we're aware of issues. There was something in the local government news, I think it was during the World Cup, about investments that some local authorities had in Qatar, which there were question marks over that. Obviously, as a council, we didn't have any investments, and we don't have any investments in that.
I inquired about this particular device of getting rid of what are...
Thank you, Councillor Huckabee. As I say, it's not an issue for you to have to deal with, fortunately, but be good for the committee, I think, to pick this up at a future meeting. I'd be quite keen to look at the formula, for want of a better word, that we use for our investments. I'd be keen to have a look at that. Councillor Allen?
Thank you. So, just a couple of questions. So, enterprise surplus looks great. The reality is, if my thinking is right, is that... we've had a few promotions in that, which means that they've moved to different pots of funding, and actually that means that there's a person not being, just not that they've not been employed, no one's been fired, no one's lost a job, but it means the intention was always that you backfill those with new recruitment. So it's good that there's a surplus there, but it actually means there's less resource, less people doing the job. In the portfolio, we've got a head of service out of it, and that cost has moved to another part of the budget, but it's left 30 something thousand. I just wonder if there's any intention to recruit that role, or is it just going to remain vacant?
Lisa?
Quite a lot of the underspend is being driven by vacancy factors. I'm not sure, I'm just looking at Anya if she's got any details. That away and ask for an update from the head of service.
Yeah, it's just only down as a forecast underspend, so I'm just thinking, presumably you've got to ask the question and write the report, is that going to likely to be spent or not by the end of the year? So it'd be useful to know, because I know I know who the characters are, and they've all moved up into a promotion, and that's good, and they deserve it as well for the work they've done, but I had a roadmap and it's worked out, but I also intended for the department to recruit, so you have a larger department to do more regeneration activity with. Otherwise, everyone's just getting a pay rise and there isn't actually any more work being done.
So if I can just add, it was out from the notes, I can see one of those posts has been recruited to, and the others essentially are assuming they will be recruited to, but obviously there'll be a time lag for that.
Yeah.
I think they've perhaps already been advertised and had difficulties being recruited to.
Okay, second one is on the revenue surplus that's forecasted at the moment, and it suggests that we moved into the capital programme to support the capital programme. So last year we, it's two questions on this actually, and particularly given we haven't had the statement of accounts, so I can't really check. Last year we moved any surplus that there was every quarter into a pot aside and kept it for cost of living mitigation measures, and there was various things like warm homes were supported, there was food banks were supported and things like that, and I'm just wondering what happened to that money up to the end of the last budget round, because I can't see it because we haven't had a statement of accounts, and what's the intent when the report says moves into the capital programme, I understand what that means, it's going to be used for capital, but what any particular budget line in the capital programme in particular, or just unallocated at this point?
So that comes from the approved medium-term financial strategy, which is obviously was approved back in February, and it recognised that the capital programme that was approved back in February had heavily depleted capital resources and there was a need to replenish them. So should investment income be higher than we had set in the budget, because we recognised that was a significant risk, that we would use any additional income to top up the capital resources, so it will be available to the administration when they're looking at the MTFS for 24-25 to put forward new capital proposals.
That's half the question. The other question was about the what's happened to the revenue surplus that we use for that cost of living mitigation pot. Was that spent or not spent?
To the extent that it wasn't spent last year, it was carried forward, as I recall, for allocation by this administration.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more for any more? Okay, great. So it gives me assurance, as a member of the same group as Councillor Chowdhury, who regularly goes and asking for money, I can tell there's definitely no magic money tree that I've been able to access anyway. So it keeps him tight. Griff on the first ring, so I hope that gives some assurance to the group. Grant, penultimate item is 12, risk management policy, and we're going over to Lisa.
Thank you, Chair. So the report provides an updated risk management policy, which, if approved by Cabinet, would supersede the existing risk management strategy. The aim of risk management within the authority is to provide systematic control of risks, hazards and losses with a view to reducing the impact on the Council. This involves active participation by all council employees to identify, control and wherever possible eliminate potential hazards and risks. The policy sets out a framework for undertaking this in a manner that is both robust but also proportionate, and ensures that risk management continues to be embedded within the organisation. As with all policies, there is a need to periodically review and update them. And this refreshed policy builds on the previous approach that has been updated to include also some suggestions for improvement that have been brought forward by internal and external audit. So key changes within this proposed revised policy include a risk assessment process, which is shown on page 4 of the policy, that would require risks to be scored both before and after risk treatment, and also the identification of further smart follow-on activities. The risk scoring matrix has also been revised from a 4x4 matrix, which is in the current strategy, to a 5x5 matrix which is in this proposed policy, with revised financial thresholds, which differentiate between core financial risks against the mainstream budget and financial project risks. And this is outlined in pages 9 to 12 of the policy. The risk registers moving forward would show a direction of travel for each risk, and risks would continue to be classified as either corporate, strategic, or service in nature. And there are draft risk register templates that have been appended to the report, just as examples of what they would look like should the policy be approved. And this draft policy is obviously coming to this committee, having already been through the groups for consideration before going on to Cabinet for approval in October. I'm happy to take any questions from through you.
Thank you, Lisa. I think this is an innovation of Councillor Locke. You noticed that the matrix didn't, the sums end up on the old matrix. I think that's where it came from.
Yes, I think it's probably been a little bit of a bugbear for some time in terms of the scoring matrix in the existing risk strategy wasn't logical in terms of how it added up, if you like. So if it scored 4 for impact and 4 for likelihood, it wasn't a straightforward multiplication, whereas in this matrix, if it scores 5 and 5, it scores 25 and would be considered very high risk.
Thanks, Lisa. Any other questions? Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I love the piece. I like the consistency now, and it's improved. I'm just checking the reality. We've got our top 6 risks identified in there, i.e. risk with a score of 15 using the new scheme, are COVID, central government funding, unauthorised access to IT, budget assumptions wrong, supporting housing, and towns fund exposure. I was surprised that COVID is still one of our top 6 risks. It was my first, but if it is, okay. And the second question is budget assumptions wrong. Have we identified any that are wrong yet?
Wrong or inaccurate?
I don't know. Just check my shorthand. They're probably inaccurate, but I think the risk, there is a risk that the budget assumptions made in the MTFS may not materialise. May not be materialised. Assumptions made in the MTFS is inflation, interest rates, pay awards, income levels have a negative effect. So it's basically a number of things like we make an assumption, Lisa gets information from the investment people, this is the rate you put in, the gauge from the government of how much you can have your salaries are going to go up, and various other things. So I just wanted to know were they accurate? I mean, because we obviously pay for the investment advice. So really, it was, were the budget assumptions, and just to look down to Chowdhury's comments about the budget, it was our budget, so I'm quite attached to it. So so I just wanted to know if the budget were many of the budget assumptions wrong.
I think the purpose of this report is about the policy itself, and the risk templates are just there to give you an example of what they would look like. If the policy is approved, then when the quarter two report comes forward, obviously the risks would be analysed and assessed based on this new policy.
So these figures aren't right, they're just for show. Just for indicative.
Placeholder.
Illustration.
Yeah.
I missed that. I thought they were the actual ones that we were focused on. I do apologise.
No, but I've made the same mistake, Councillor Sankey. So. Yeah. Councillor Litton?
I think it's a very positive step forward, to be honest. I'm quite happy to support this.
Yeah. Agreed. Anybody else? Comments or questions? Okay, great. I did have...
Can I ask one thing? It doesn't do with this, but yeah. As this is probably the last audit meeting for this, can I put on record my thanks to all the hard work that she's done, and she's done an excellent
in general over many years, and we've had many discussions where she's collecting me on.
Thank you. Yeah, and absolutely seconded. Yeah, all the very best. 25th of October, is it you heard of? Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, councillors. And obviously, I do wish you all well and the council as a whole.
Thank you, Lisa. And off to Australia for 5-6 weeks, which I'm still a bit sick about. Yeah. But apart from that, we wish you all the best. Yeah, thank you very much. So, date of the next meeting, which will be, being positive, it will happen. Is it the 27th, sorry, or the 29th? I skipped heading my 29th of November, where we'll hopefully have the two meetings, the audit meeting and then the audit statement of the council meeting on the 29th. Brilliant. Thank you to everybody for being here. Thank you to officers and colleagues for presenting their reports. And see everybody on Monday, 9th November.